This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's now 7:46 a.m. on this Thursday, December 27th. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Joyce Goh. Just before we get to the top business stories of the day, folks, just a heads up. After the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we'll have the Breakfast Grill. And today we are going to revisit another conversation that we had earlier this year. As we've been doing all of these last few days of 2018, we've been revisiting some of the best conversations of the grill that we've had in 2018. So today we look at the conversation I had with Nobel Peace Prize winner, Professor Dr. Muhammad Yunus, founder of Grameen Bank.
Yeah, so since 1983, Grameen Bank has issued about $25 billion in collateral-free loans to the poorest of the poor in Bangladesh, while boasting, I think, a loan repayment rate of 99%. Mm. I remember this grill, Hannah. It's very interesting how, you know, the way they lend and, yeah, and still the not much NPLs at all.
Yeah, because normally you talk about the creditworthiness of, you know, these loan applicants before you give it out to them. I mean, there's a discussion that we have on our show many times, right? When we look at, say, the unaffordability of, you know, the property sector for many Malaysians. And with these guys, with Grameen Bank, right? On one hand, you're lending to the poorest of the poor in Bangladesh, and they get 99% of their money back. How on earth? I must say that, you know, this grill, which first aired on August 14th, I literally walked out, you know, had, well, not literally, but I had my mind pretty much blown, because so many things that you think the financial system is based on, well, that just got upended after this discussion. So make sure you tune in for that. Again, the grill with 2006 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Professor Dr. Muhammad Yunus of Grameen Bank. That's coming on after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. Okay, now let's look at some of the top business stories. Here's a biggie. You've got this exclusive in the Business Times of today's New Straits Times, talking about Tan Sri Halim Saad possibly taking over a portion of Khazanah's stake in UEM Sunrise. Now, the link between Tan Sri Halim and UEM Sunrise goes all the way back to the Asian financial crisis era. So here we are some 20 plus years later. Could he be actually making a move for a company that he once helmed?
Yeah, so BT sources are saying that Halim Saad is believed to be eyeing an over 30% stake. So based on UEM Sunrise's market cap of about 2.95 billion ringgit, a stake of 33% would cost Tan Sri Halim Saad some 974 million ringgit. Mm. So this move, Han, if it goes through, could trigger a MGO, a mandatory general offer. Looking at this right now, Khazanah has about a 66% stake in UEM Sunrise.
Yeah, now we have seen some moves on the front, right, whereby Khazanah is paring down some of its stakes, I think, in IHH Healthcare, with Mitsui emerging as the majority shareholder there, a major shareholder there. And we have seen this broader theme coming out of Putrajaya, whereby they want to monetize some of their assets, pare down their presence in some equity holdings. Now, it's interesting that Tan Sri Halim's name has cropped up because, yet again, because he is seen as a protege to Tun Daim, right? And we know, I mean, without going into all that history there, we know about the debacle about UEM Sunrise and Renong and the put options, etc. But then now in this push for the government to monetize some of their assets, it's interesting that, you know, once again, one of the old boys is being relied on. In the lead up to this story, we noted that Tan Sri Halim has been selling his stake in Sumatech, right?
Yeah.
Sumatech. He's, I believe, the majority shareholder. Let me just double check.
Yeah,
that one.
Largest shareholder.
Yeah.
And I think he's been paring down his stake in Sumatech Resources. That's an oil and gas company. It's also in PN17 already. Mm-hmm. And he disposed his shares. He's been disposing his shares in that company over the past 4 months, sold about 54.39 million shares December 21st via open market. This is according to a Bursa filing. Mm-hmm. So as of December 21st, I think he holds about a 9.28% stake in Sumatech. So that's quite interesting. But you know, Tan Sri Halim Saad, as you said, he's no stranger to corporate Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And he is known to be, what you're saying, a protege of Tun Daim. Mm-hmm. So he actually first joined Tun Daim's outfit Peremba in 1980. And at that time, Halim Saad was about 27.
Is that right? 1980, 1987?
That's what you're saying. Yeah,
maybe.
Thereabouts.
Okay.
I don't know, but that's what some news reports say. But in the 1980s, he first joined, he has worked with Tun Daim.
Yeah, because he's in his 60s now, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, yeah, yeah. Mm. So we'll figure out how old Sri Halim is later. We'll have some interns look into that. But yeah, it's interesting that the you know shall we say again, old boys or those names associated with perhaps some dark chapters in corporate Malaysia. You know, at least in terms of M&As, you know, that those have resurfaced now. So why resurface now? Why this paring down of that stake in Sumatech as well? Is it to perhaps fund this new acquisition, or is it just a good old fundamental play? You know, because like you mentioned, Sumatech, PN17 now. But 4 months ago, oil prices were at, what, 85, going up to 80 plus dollars a barrel now. And that sell-off of Sumatech had actually begun even back then. So anyways, this is all just, well, we're trying to piece this together, right? Now, yeah. Obviously, what this piece, this exclusive in the Business Times or the New Straits Times is alluding to is like, well, hey, you know, Tan Sri Halim could buy that stake over from Khazanah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he also had a Tan Sri Halim filed a lawsuit against Khazanah and the then government that time for this whole Renong UEM deal, which eventually, I think in 2015, he lost his legal battle to recover about 1.8 billion ringgit over this settlement of this put option thing that happened for Renong and UEM.
Right. So another common thread there between what happened during what's described as the Black Week in 1997, when there was this massive sell-off in Malaysian equities, and you look at the sell-off now, right? And could this be an opportune time for Tan Sri Halim to go in, go back into UEM Sunrise on the cheap? Because, you know, broadly speaking, some 5.6 trillion US dollars have been wiped out of market cap from Asian equities so far this year. Looking at the FBM, KLCI has declined by almost 7% so far this year. Looking at this FBM small cap index, it's declined by almost 35% this year. So could this be an opportune time for Tan Sri Halim to then take over that stake from Khazanah of UEM Sunrise? But then at the same time, you've got to consider, well, you know, Khazanah's stake in then UEM Sunrise is less valuable now. Mm-hmm. Is this the right time for Khazanah to be cashing out?
Yeah. Well, according to an analyst that BT spoke to, they're saying that UEM Sunrise's share price that has been dropping, thus making it cheap for acquisition. Mm-hmm. Looking at the share price, the company does have significant assets. They have about 4.93 billion ringgit worth of land for development, with a development value about 14.8 billion ringgit. So what the analyst is suggesting is that Khazanah could sell its stake at a price between its net tangible asset value and market cap.
Right.
But I think BT contacted UEM Sunrise's CEO Anwar Sharin Abdul Ajib, and when contacted, he said that he was not in a position to comment on the matter. This story about Tan Sri Halim emerging into UEM Sunrise.
So beyond all these noise, or what if you want to call it noise, you know, if you look at the fundamentals of UEM Sunrise, they have posted a net profit of 260 million ringgit for the first three quarters of this year. Top line revenue that is coming in at 1.3 billion ringgit for the first 9 months of this year. But looking at some quarter-on-quarter performance, though, so for the third quarter, their revenue, UEM Sunrise, almost halved, down to 430 million ringgit, although for the second quarter, they did better on year. First quarter of this year, they saw their revenue also falling by about 150, 200 million ringgit year-on-year. Looking at the bottom line, though, net income, so third quarter there, a drastic drop in their bottom line for the third quarter. The second quarter, though, they saw a rebound in fortunes, coming from a net loss in the second quarter of 2017 up to a net profit of 206 million ringgit in the second quarter. First quarter was pretty much flat there in terms of net income. So that's a look at the fundamentals story of UEM Sunrise. Is that what's driving this deal, or is it due to good old valuations and perhaps this government push to monetize some of their holdings?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at how much assets they have, as I mentioned, they have about nearly 5 billion ringgit worth of land for development. So it'll be interesting to see what projects or how are they going to unlock that value for that asset.
I wish your story came out before I did the grill with UEM Agenta. Now, granted, Agenta is separate from UEM Sunrise, but I wonder what's going on
in that group.
Yeah, in that group. Okay, so we'll continue monitoring that story. Again, if you want to check it out, it's an exclusive in today's Business Times. That's the New Straits Times, Business Times. Okay, moving on to another story. We've got, still in keeping with that theme as to what could drive this move by Tan Sri Saim, it's because of the sell-off in equities, right? And UEM Sunrise shares have been cheaper. And it's not just confined to UEM Sunrise. This sell-off is not just a Malaysian theme, it's a global theme. I think looking at Asian equities, some $5.6 trillion US dollars in market cap has been wiped out so far this year. And the FBM KLCI is no stranger to that. We have seen the net selling by foreign investors out of Malaysian equities. Year to date, the FBM KLCI has posted a decline of 6.9%.
Well, I think in recent days, I think the FBM KLCI is still, I mean, it's been trending down. It failed to continue its uptrend in the past trading days, drifting into market correction. I think investors are spooked as US equities inch closer into a bear market, mm-hmm. as well as oil prices that's dipping. At one time, it dipped below $50 per barrel yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday, but then it rebounded.
And,
yeah, so Brent ended up 9.2%, up to $54.47. Recall yesterday, we were talking about how Brent futures are nearing that $50 mark. Yeah. I think $50.47, mm-hmm. which would...
38 cent at one time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. which would then trigger the Ministry of Finance here in Malaysia, perhaps re-looking at the budget 2019.
Yeah.
And then looking at US stocks as well, you know, they're all gain about anything from about 5 to 6% there overnight. So question is, is this just a one-off rebound, or is this going to be a sustained rebound in equities and oil prices?
Well, Starbiz spoke to head of research for Inter-Pacific Securities, Pong Ting Siu. He did not rule out the possibility for the stock market to drop further in the last three trading days of 2018. Mm-hmm. But he pointed out that there's not much room for further downtrend. He also said that unless oil prices shows signs of improvement, the US stocks will continue to create bad sentiment among local investors.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess no more window dressing when it comes to year end for the stock markets this year.
That's why, you know, you got, like we mentioned yesterday, JP Morgan then outlining three reasons why they think, you know, now is a good time to buy Asian stocks. One, you got the US dollar outlook that's set to weaken next year with just two Fed rate hikes. So a lot of the upper trajectory there on US interest rates that's been baked in. Something else is the fears over the US-China trade war that appears to be well priced in as well. Can't recall the third reason, but, you know, you can go check out that story. I think it's on CNBC. And also, so there's all these reasons and factors that essentially go into determining the risk appetite for not just Malaysian equities, but Asian equities and just equities in general.
It's just the sentiment, right? So we have news coming out that OSK Holdings, they have permanently scrapped the listing of its indirect subsidiary OCC Cables Limited on the main board of the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. I think the reason stated was due to the continuous adverse global market conditions.
So it looks like the volatility in the market is not just affecting appetite for M&A, right? So perhaps Tan Sri Halim's side going in and buying up a stake in UEM Sunrise, but it's also perhaps forcing some others to delay IPO plans there. So it's not just OSK. We also understand that in Hong Kong, the Fosun Tourism Group, they're the ones who operate the Club Med.
Right.
So they've cut the size of its IPO in Hong Kong down to almost half because of the dampened risk appetite out there in the market.
Actually, Han, also I think Singapore entrepreneur and tycoon Ron Sim, he aborted his plans to list V3 Group Limited in Hong Kong. Also, I think V3 Group is the largest maker of massage chairs.
Yeah.
This is the Osim brand. So so they actually aborted his plan to list in Hong Kong as well. This was a couple of months ago.
So I know on this program we talked about QSR brands and, you know,
KFC, the IPO.
Right, we've been following those proposed IPO plans for a while now. Mm-hmm. So given the volatility that we're seeing in equity markets right now, I wonder what those guys at QSR are thinking right now. Did they go through with it, or maybe push it or delay it some more?
Because there was this whole rumor, I think there was some expectation that they might list this year, and some news flow came out from it potentially this year. I think they're saying they're good going to go ahead listing. That came out this year, but until today, they haven't listed yet. So maybe they're looking at next year.
Yeah, well, there are only three more trading days and I don't see anything.
Yeah, but if they do list, I think they have big plans for expansion.
Mm.
It's one of the reasons, I think, for their restaurant business.
Yeah, yeah. Good old Pizza Hut, KFC, right. And we had them on the grill.
Yeah, we had them on the grill. So if you want to listen to that interview, you can listen to it on the BFM app.
All right. Now let's very quickly look at Genting now, because looks like they've been hit with another legal tussle. So an indirect wholly owned subsidiary under Genting Group called Resorts World Las Vegas, they are being sued by Wynn Resorts. They are saying that one of the properties in Las Vegas that Genting is developing over there perhaps looks too similar to Wynn Resorts.
Yeah, so Wynn Resorts is claiming copyright infringement over the architectural design of Resorts World Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. They allege that the designs are quite similar to their own designs employed on their properties. So as a result of that, Genting and Genting Malaysia's shares dropped yesterday.
Yeah, so we'll certainly keep an eye out on how both Genting and Genting shares perform when markets open in about an hour or so from now.
Interestingly, Wynn Las Vegas and Resorts World Las Vegas, they are located opposite each other on the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, same, but different. Not really. Not the same. All right, we're coming up to the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And don't forget, after that, we've got a replay of the Breakfast Grill with 2006 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Professor Dr. Muhammad Yunus. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.